Flying Underclass with Caterina Ducati.
I knew she was trouble. The moment she stepped on the plane, I knew it. She had that way of walking like no one else had the right to be there. Twin set and pearls from Alabama. If she was so high and mighty, why was she flying with us? Wing and a prayer, we were. The flying orange crate. But I load her into a seat and go through the bit, pointing out the exits and saying what to do in the unlikely event of a forced landing. Kiss you, you know what, goodbye, that's what. Well, anyway, we get airborne and everyone's humpy because we're about 2 hours late coming out of Washington. But it's settling down and I come up and offer her a drink. Vodka martini, she says. Not a hint of please. And I mix her one. She sips it and says it isn't right. I hitch up my smile and I say, I'll have another shot at mixing it. Still no good. And there's half the plane waiting to be served. Wendy's doing the other side. She's 3 seats ahead of me already. Doesn't anyone know how to fix a vodka martini? She starts in really loudly. Desmond's the steward, and he should come and sort it out. But he's hungover and pretends not to notice. Her husband's next to her, and he looks really embarrassed, poor thing. It's just a drink, he keeps saying. And in the end, I leave her the bottles and tell her to mix it herself. I could have got into trouble if Desmond had seen me, but he didn't, or he made out he didn't. I get to the end of the plane and put the dinners in the microwave and flip open the mirror to check the war paint. I remember what they told me on the induction course. Lipstick should be bright enough to be seen across the room. It was a tough course. You had to be cheerful the whole time, but you could be thrown out for laughing too loud. You had to be both pretty and invisible. Jeff came and spoke to us on our last day. Oh, you must have seen him in the adverts, going round in his helicopter and all that. We were the ones with the slogan, Gotta Fly. He's still quite dishy, I must say. Well, he tells us that Icarus Airlines is a world-class organisation, and we should be proud to wear the colours. We all have these custard yellow uniforms that make us easy to pick out in the dark, I guess. He'd just bought the firm in a takeover and was expanding it, which is lucky for me. I'd worked for a much bigger airline, but when I hit the big 4-0, they grounded me on the complaints desk, which is like the worst flight you can imagine, and you never leave the ground. Life was one long migraine, so I quit. Of course, at Icarus Airlines, it's all short contracts. But at my age, you take what you can get. So I don't want to lose this job, I'm thinking to myself as the oven dings and out we go with the dinners. And when I get to Twinset, I give her chicken whatever and take the vodka bottle back. Now, the vodka was down way below the label, and the vermouth too. So she'd obviously had a good few belts out of them. Not that it had sweetened her temper any. I reckon that's about 3 drinks I should charge her for. And as they're $3.95 each, she's not happy. A voice goes up and Desmond can't ignore it this time, and he bounces over, trying to focus. He smiles in the wrong direction and asks what the problem is. I say she's taken quite a few swigs from the bottle and has to pay, and she starts in saying we should give drinks free anyway, and she's never flying with us again. Hallelujah! And I reckon maybe she's been banned from flying with everyone else. Now everyone's dinners are getting cold, and I'm thinking I'm going to hit her in a minute, which I don't want to do, as the company doesn't back you up in court cases. You screw up, you're on your own. Only this guy in the row behind her gets up, one of the passengers, and he leans over and speaks to her in a soft voice. I can't quite hear what he says, but it shuts her up pretty quick, and she pays for the drinks. I don't think he said anything much. It was the look he gave her. After I've collected the plates, I go to the man in the seat behind Twinset and offer him a free liqueur. I'm supposed to charge for everything, but I can always say we had some turbulence and he spilled it. So I pour him one, and he tells me he works in security. He's talking so quietly I have to strain to hear him, and he asks me if we had to clean up before we got the plane out. I thought he was talking about the fact that we were 2 hours late, and I tell him that we had some engine trouble, but he's not listening. He keeps on about having to clean the plane up. I'm thinking, he's not going to be sick, is he? Of course, I've cleaned up plenty in my time, but I don't want it over me. So I start to get up and I say, I have to be going. Which is true, as we've got lottery tickets and things to sell. But the man picks out our in-flight magazine. Jeff is on the front of it, and the man laughs to himself, but not happily. The man asked me if I knew Jeff. Well, I wasn't going to answer that one. I just said I'd met him once or twice. I mean, tell me the old, old story. There'd been this disco at the end of our induction course, and everyone's a little drunk, only Jeff does a couple of slow dances with me at the end. And everyone's thinking, she's not going to get him, is she? I mean, she's old enough to be his first wife. Tell the truth, I was amazed. Most of us had been round the block a bit, but there were a couple of real lookers there, right at the edge on me, let's face it. But it's me going up in the lift with him, and it's me going into his king-size room. Oddly enough, you might think, it wasn't just a one-night thing. Jeff would invite me out now and again. I don't know if he had other women, I didn't ask. I didn't ask a lot of things, actually. He'd just ring me up and ask if I was free that evening, and we'd go for drinks or dancing, he was a good dancer. And then his chauffeur would drive us back to his flat. It was a nice flat, too, near St. James's Park. I mean, talk about pricing. Whenever I woke up, he was always awake. If he wasn't watching his massive TV, he'd be playing on his computer. He played poker. Arizona Slim, he called himself. He won a lot, too. Mostly from a guy called Rattlesnake George. One time I'd got up to use the loo. When I went back, he was sitting on the bed, and he asked me why I'd gone in for being a stewardess. Well, you know, all the places you'd go, even if you get there at 3 in the morning and have to go back again on the breakfast flight. Chance to meet people, not to be stuck in some office listening to the air conditioning. That, and having a daughter at university and an ex on the dole. Then, he said, he used to live in a high-rise, off a street that had 3 William Hills, 3 chip shops, a pie shop, 6 off-licences, a tanning salon, a pawnbroker's, a place that cashes your cheques and does rebates for Polish builders, 5 burger joints, a club with exotic dancing, a place run by Indians that sells plastic washing baskets and religious icons, and 2 warehouses that sell burglar and car alarms. Well, that, give or take a cost of coffee, could be where I'm living. But he says he's ashamed of his customers. He says he feels sick to think that he's just exporting British trash abroad to pollute all the good places. A flying underclass. Now, some of the late night flights can get a bit rough, I don't deny it, but they're mostly all right. If you have a word, they usually calm down and sleep it off. But Jeff shakes his head. He says the customers should be grateful, but that they're cattle and deserve to be treated like cattle. Then he starts going on about how everyone is out for themselves and that only the strong survive. And that it was the law of evolution, and that's how it should be. Well, evolution's all very well, I think, but it doesn't teach you how to get friends. Jeff was odd. One moment he'd be telling you that he'd built up a world-class airline, and the next that the punters were mugs and only fit to be customers. It was like he couldn't make up his mind whether he was a con man or a visionary entrepreneur. He was moody. Maybe that's why he liked talking to me. I've always been good with people. He tells me that we're going to add premium grade to our flying classes. He wants to attract businessmen, important people, not the rabble. Back then, we had first class and economy. They were the same thing, really, except in first class your chair had a doily and you got your dinner first. But he went ahead and introduced premium grade. It was like the others, but with a bit more room. Even in first class, you had your knees under your chin the whole time, but people in premium grade could cross their legs without kicking the seat in front of them. And their seats had to be more comfortable, but it was too expensive to reupholster them. So we went through all the planes, taking some of the stuffing out of the seats in first class and most of it out of the seats in economy. We daren't put it in the premium grade seats as it'll stretch the covers, so we burn it all. And boy, does it burn fast. And from then on, everyone in economy left the plane rubbing their backs and cursing. So this mystery man is in premium grade. And we're coming into land at Stansted, so I have to go around securing the luggage racks and make sure everyone's belted in. As I check to see his seat belt is on, I see he's got cufflinks in the shape of rattlesnakes. That isn't good. I remember Rattlesnake George, who used to lose so much money to Jeff. But that's the thing, I think to myself as we go into a dive. Lately, it's been Jeff who's been losing. And I remember what Des had told me a couple of months before. There had been something on the news about a plane that had crashed in a mountain in Macedonia. There wasn't much left of it, but Desmond said to me that he reckoned that that plane that had crashed had belonged to us. What would it be doing in Macedonia, I asked. None of our flights go there, and we'd have heard if we'd lost any of our crew. Desmond said it wasn't like that, and then he wouldn't say any more for a while. But in the evening, after he'd nipped off to the bathroom a few times and had a few swigs from his bottle, He told me that that flight wasn't a regular flight. It was specially chartered. He said that Jeff had been leasing out our planes to security forces who were taking terror suspects over to Turkey for special questioning. Des said that while the torturer has a go at them, there's a couple of people in an office in Washington watching via a satellite hookup and asking questions using a translator. He says, must be like interrogating people through the au pair. I think he's putting me on, but he swears it's true. He heard it from a pilot he'd met who'd flown them. The pilot had strict instructions not to come back to the passenger area at any price. But one time from the cockpit window, he sees this bloke in handcuffs led towards the plane. I asked Des if he thought it was sabotage, but he didn't think so. He reckoned all our planes were falling to bits, and Jeff had simply cut back on safety checks as he was at full stretch and couldn't afford to have planes in dock. Well, I'd heard about these rendition flights, though I thought the CIA could pick a better airline than ours, but Des reckoned the bigger lines were more cautious now. And when I next saw Jeff in his flat, half his furniture was missing. He hardly spoke to me. He had the cook make me a lovely dinner, but I ate it sitting alone at the table. He just carried on playing poker on the computer. And then I realized, maybe the poker game had just been a cover. This was the CIA's way of paying him, so Jeff could explain where he'd got the money from without giving the game away. And now they were getting it back. Then the doorbell rings and there's two men come to repossess his three-piece suite. I was so embarrassed, but he just points it out to them and gets back on with the game. And all this is going through my mind as we bump to a halt when our pilot decides to imitate Skippy the bush kangaroo up the runway. I'm smiling everyone off the plane, and Twinsette and her poor husband get off, and then there's the mystery man, and he gives me a little smile that is more like a shadow under his nose. And I'm suddenly thinking, I've got to let Jeff know. It's about 10 in the morning, and I get a train into London. I ring him on my mobile, but he doesn't pick up, and I leave a message that Rattlesnake George was after him. I must have sounded pretty hysterical, and when I got to his flat and pressed the security buzzer, there's no answer. And by this time, I'm going frantic. The doorman comes out, and he recognizes me, and says Jeff moved out last week, after his car was repossessed. Then I have to get back to Stansted, as I'm going on an evening flight to Malta. When I get home the next day, I'm exhausted, but I see there's a few messages on my answer phone. One from Colin, saying the alimony will be late again. I skip the excuse. Then Becky is on, saying she'll be back from university in a few days, as it's reading week. Then the last one is from Jeff. He thanked me for warning him. And then he goes rambling on about how it's always been the strong against the weak, and the strong must always prevail. And the customers were mugs, and we were a world-class airline, and he went on and on like that, asking why nobody appreciated him. He said that there were funny noises on his phone, and there was a van parked in the street that had been there for 3 days, and he was sure they were watching him from it. He was falling to pieces. I spent the next 12 hours dead to the world, and when I woke up, and I hear on the news that Jeff has gone missing. I wondered if I should play the tape to the police, but I didn't want them to hear him like that. And they never found him. Pretty soon we went bust, and we were all back out on the street. Des became a security guard at the local shopping mall. I see him sometimes. I'm working in one of those places that get tax rebates for Polish builders, only what we don't tell them, of course, is that we charge 40% for filling in a couple of forms, and the revenue would do it all for nothing. But it's so hard getting an appointment there these days. Even though they never found his body, I'm sure Jeff's dead. The thing is, he left a will, leaving everything to me. He wrote it on hotel stationery and posted it to his lawyer. His ex is contesting it, and he'll have to be missing a long time before he can be legally declared dead, and once the bailiffs have finished, there won't be very much to divvy up anyway. But he said in the note, I was the one person who'd shown him any kindness. I had a couple of reporters round my door till I turned the garden hose on them. The worst of it is I recognised Rattlesnake George not long after on a news programme. Apparently he had been working for the CIA and had had a nervous breakdown. He freaked out and went into the Houses of Parliament and threw red paint over the front bench. He hadn't been out to get Jeff after all, So if I hadn't rung Jeff, maybe he wouldn't have taken his own life. Maybe he thought he was on a death list or something. So by trying to help him, I made him panic and killed him. But I tell myself not to be so silly. I wanted to be a stewardess because when I was growing up, I used to look out of my bedroom window at the planes at night flying above, their wing lights flickering red and green and the passenger lights in a row. It seemed so exciting. Nobody tells you what it's actually like when you get out there. And for all Jeff's talk about the strong flourishing, I don't think he was ready for it either. None of us really know what life is like until it hits us in the face. Then we're all in shock. That's why we should look out for each other. Maybe even twin set and pearls from Alabama wasn't so bad once. But she can fix her own drinks in future.
In Flying Underclass, Caterina Giugatti played Ingrid. The play was written and directed by Ben Francis.